Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Lots to talk about in the program today. Football, the regular season is complete, but both Ole Miss and Mississippi State getting ready for bowl games, and both of them with a little bit of off-the-field news to talk about. We'll hit those topics, and we'll talk some basketball in the program as well. We'll also hear from John Davis, the sports editor of the Oxford Citizen of Journal Incorporated, and we'll talk a little bit of recruiting, with John Davis later in the program. Let's start it off, Logan, with the Robert Kimdichie news. Man, you know, it's been the off-field topic of the week. It started last Sunday afternoon. And Sundays, Logan, you know, it ought to be that kind of safe zone. You know, come in from church, it ought to be that time where you can take a little bit of a nap or watch some NFL games on TV. But it was all about Robert Kimdichie Sunday afternoon, because that was when news broke of what had happened to him hours before, late Saturday night, in the Buckhead section of Atlanta. At the Grand Hyatt Hotel, Robert Kimdichie falling what turned out to be 15 feet. The original report that I saw said four stories. Turned out to be a fall of about 15 feet. He was taken to a hospital in Atlanta. He was released and taken to jail. Ultimately, on Monday, he was charged with possession of marijuana. It's a bizarre story here, Logan, because there's also the confirmation from Atlanta police of a broken window, but nobody's been able to answer the question yet as to how the window was broken. So lots of Robert Kimdichie news this week. On Monday, Hugh Freeze told us that his status for the Sugar Bowl, Kimdichie's status, was undecided. The case was still then playing out and is still now playing out. It is still an active investigation with the Atlanta Police Department. Right now, the only charge against Robert Kimdichie is possession of a small amount of marijuana, but that case is still ongoing. Free said he has not decided Kimdichie's status, wants to get all the facts before he makes that decision. And then on Tuesday, the school issued a statement attributed to Robert Kimdichie, and it was pretty long, Logan, as those player statements go, and it started with an apology, as most of them do, and it went on to talk about the disappointment he felt for putting Hugh Freeze and his teammates in this position, but it ended with kind of a plea. I think a plea for Freeze to allow Kimdichie to play in the Sugar Bowl, when he said, "I really want to finish this season's journey with my brothers." Now, everyone expects Robert Kimdichie to declare for the NFL shortly after this season is complete. I think he'll do that. I don't think this is going to affect his draft status a great deal. He was a projected first-round pick. I think he'll still be that, maybe a few spots lower. I know that this will be a warning sign, a warning flag, a red flag for teams who are getting ready to invest that kind of money in a first-round pick, but ultimately, Logan, we've seen teams like the Raiders and the Cowboys. I mean, somebody out there is going to take a chance in the first round on a player of Kimdichie's ability, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, he's you know, top of the line defensive tackle, and those just don't come around every single year. A player of his caliber doesn't come around every single draft year. So teams that are looking to shore up their defensive line are going to take a chance on him, because the talent's there. Obviously, he's still got a lot of maturing to do, and, you know, as the years go on, and teams will hope that they can help him out in that regard. So they're going to take his talent and try to help him along as to become a mature adult. And, you know, obviously that was a huge mistake on his part, especially this close to draft time. You know, if he is, you know, going to declare, which everybody, like you said, expects him to do, you know, you don't go out and do things like that. And, you know, I think Johnny Manziel had to learn that type of lesson a couple of years ago. You know, a guy that just had some maturing issues, and we still see that continuing today with the Browns. And, you know, it's kind of a back and forth issue with him. And, you know, hopefully for Robert's sake, it won't continue to be. Maybe this will be a learning lesson, like he said in the statement, and maybe he'll learn from it and kind of move forward and, you know, be on the straight and narrow from now on.
Well, the broken window is the key point here in this discussion, I think, and how that gets answered. Because how that is answered, you mentioned a team trying to help Robert. Robert Kimdichie, I think, is going to need some help. We'll see it. You know, depending on you know what happens with this story, it just looks like you know he is a troubled young man or could be, and you know I hope he can find whatever help he needs. Whether at Ole Miss or someone else, because number one, he's a great personality. You know, he's a guy who, when we talk to him, which has been rare, you know, these you're gonna have guys go through the program, this class of 13, this you know, heralded signing class at Ole Miss, Hugh Freeze's first complete signing class, the 2013 group, a consensus top 10. You're gonna have guys pass through that program with an incredibly high profile who rarely spoke to the media. I mean, Laquan Treadwell has been the exception in that group because he's been a safe pick for them. He's stayed out of trouble, and he has done okay and hasn't said anything outlandish in interviews, and so you get to keep coming back. We've rarely heard from Laramie Tunsil, and just about as rarely have we heard from Robert Kimdichie. Now, I say all that to say this. When we have been exposed to Robert Kimdichie, when he has been available for interviews, he has a very engaging personality. He is a guy who wants to please people and is bothered when he disappoints people. And I think you could pick up that tone in his apology and statement that was issued on Tuesday. So I hope Robert gets whatever help he needs and can go on and have the type of NFL draft experience and career that has been predicted for him for so long. This is a guy who was a former number one recruit, not just number one defensive end or defensive lineman. He was the number one overall recruit in 2013. That being said, Logan, Ole Miss does have a little bit of experience in playing without Robert Kimdichie, including this year when he sat out the Texas A&M game after sustaining a concussion against Memphis. And the A&M game turned out to be one of the Rebels' better defensive performances of the year. They really shut down the run. A&M didn't try to run it that much, but Ole Miss was dominant in that category. And they held A&M in the passing game, too. I mean, they held the Aggies to fewer than 200 total yards in that game. It was a very good all-around game for the Ole Miss defense, and it came against a quality Texas A&M offense. So we'll see where that goes, what Kimdichie's status for the Sugar Bowl will be. Obviously, he's not been at practice, or he was not at practice on Monday when practice was open to the media, and the rotation along the defensive line was Woodrow Hamilton and Breland Speaks among the starters, and then DJ Jones, and then a true freshman, Ross Donnelly, who has appeared in only six games this year. So that's kind of the group that you may see getting all the reps against Oklahoma State. And now it's a little bit different defensive line. Let me go back and say when the Rebels had that very good performance against Texas A&M, Fadal Brown was a part of that, starting defensive end who's big enough to move down and play tackle in certain situations if they want him to do that. He's out for this game with surgery on his foot, so they're going to miss him as well. So a little bit different defensive line getting ready for Ole Miss. What's the preparation been like for Mississippi State in the Belt Bowl?
Well, the biggest news coming out of bowl practices and bowl prep is the loss of Tony Hughes as Mississippi State safeties coach. He's been a part of Dan Mullen's staff since the beginning in 2009, and he's one of the top recruiters in the country, and especially in the state of Mississippi. He's recruited this state very, very well. He's kind of the guy behind all the in-state signees that Mississippi State's gotten over the year, a lot of those diamond in the rough type of players like Bernardi McKinney and Jonathan Banks that have gone on to the NFL and starred there, and just really what highly recruited players, but Tony Hughes was able to find them, get them to Mississippi State, and start developing them there. It's a huge loss, Tony Hughes taking the head coaching job at Jackson State. Really proud for Tony. Obviously, I've gotten to know him but at my time at Ole Miss and at Mississippi State over the last few years, and I've known him for a long time, and, you know, he's such a great human being, take away the football and the coaching knowledge that he has, just a great human being. You don't find many better than Tony Hughes. And I think he's going to do wonders for Jackson State, who's obviously been through a tough time over the last 4 years. Four different head coaches in 4 years, that's really tough. And I think Tony will bring some stability to that program and some accountability to that program. I know it's been a mess down there in Jackson over the last couple of years, a lot of internal administration problems down there. And I think Tony Hughes can kind of bring some stability to the football program. I don't know if he can help with any of the other, but he's going to help that football program a lot, just from an accountability standpoint, like I said. And Mississippi State's got to find someone to replace him. It's still kind of up in the air right now if Tony Hughes will be back to coach the Belk Bowl. He would like to. He's been invited back by Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen did the same thing when he came to Mississippi State, that when he was hired as a head coach, he was still the offensive coordinator at Florida and kind of juggled back and forth between Starkville and Gainesville. He was getting his staff together and recruiting at Mississippi State and also preparing Florida for the national championship game that year. And he was able to call plays in that game. They won that game, and then he resumed full-time duty here at Mississippi State. Tony Hughes has kind of been given this week off by Dan Mullen. He told him, go get your feet on the ground at Jackson State. And if you can come back, we would love to have you. If it works out where you can't, we understand. And I think both parties are going to try to get him to Charlotte for the Belk Bowl. But still not sure right now if that's going to happen, because he's got a lot of ground to make up in recruiting and also getting his staff together down there. So a lot of work to do for Tony Hughes, but knowing the type of man he is, he wants to, finish out the season with his guys here at Mississippi State, just his loyalty to the program. He'd like to try to do that. In the meantime, Ephraim Banda, Mississippi State's defense quality control coach, is kind of taking over that safeties role since Sunday for Mississippi State. So he's kind of the guy heading that up right now. I've actually been able to watch the first five practices for Mississippi State. It's the first practices I've even been able to see since the first week of August. So it's been a long time since I've been out there at practice. And first time getting to see a lot of these young players that signed in the 2015 class. Just haven't seen a whole lot of them. I've only seen them in pads one time prior to this week. And I watched Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday's practice. Okay, had to get five practices in there. And then they've closed practices since then. But those five practices were dedicated to a lot of those younger players. A lot of the veteran players were standing on the sidelines. Some of them went through some individual drills, but they didn't get a whole lot of team drills, team scrimmage work. A lot of that was dedicated to those younger players. And I was really impressed with some of the defensive linemen that State has, some of the young guys, a couple of defensive ends, Kendall Jones and Anthony Mullins, and then defensive tackle Fletcher Adams. I was really impressed with those guys. Those were all true freshmen that they were able to redshirt this year. And, if those guys will start getting into the rotation next year, I really like what Mississippi State's got in that regard as far as their young defensive linemen. They may have to replace some defensive linemen, obviously. Some news out of Starkville for the Belk Bowl anyways. Defensive end Ryan Brown is not going to be able to play in that game. He had surgery on his ankle. He had a screw inserted in there. It's something he dealt with the latter half of the season. That's kind of why you saw his production go down. Dan Mullen is not one to really talk about injuries a whole lot. So, we didn't find out about that until the surgery was even over with. But
Do we need to send Brad Locke down there to ask about injuries?
I don't think Brad would do any good. The last time he did, Dan Mullen stormed out of the room. Him and Brandon Marcello kind of ran him off that day. So, yeah, I don't think that would be a good idea. Ryan Brown, that's a huge loss for Mississippi State's defensive line. But like I said, that's kind of the explanation, why his production kind of decreased at the end of the season. He just kind of played through the pain, but obviously wasn't the same type of player he was at the beginning of the year. And then tight end Gus Wally is also going to be ruled out for the Belk Bowl. He suffered a couple of concussions this past year, and they're just going to hold him out, for his safety. His future kind of going forward still up in the air. They're just going to kind of, run some concussion tests on him moving forward to see if, what's best for him in his future, if he can continue to go on the football field, or, whether it'd be best to kind of move on and, not risk getting another concussion. And then some encouraging news on that regard. long snapper Winston Chapman, who was a senior and has been Mississippi State's long snapper for the last 4 years, he tore his ACL in the LSU game in week two and has been out in what was thought to be for the entire season. And now looks like he's going to be able to be back for the Belk Bowl. He's been out at practice a little bit, snapping. And they're going to try to, if he can go, they're going to get him out there and be able to snap for his final game. So I think that's a really cool story to battle back from an injury like that and play in your final game of your college career. That's a pretty special thing for a guy that's a walk-on. So that's a pretty cool deal right there.
That is a good story. You like to write those when those come around. A little other news for Ole Miss off the field. It looks like tight end Evan Ingram and defensive end Fadal Brown that we mentioned earlier will seek their draft grades from the NFL. They're underclassmen, and they'll see where they're going to fit and then make decisions as to whether they'll come back and continue their college careers. That is significant because because of where those guys fit at their respective positions and what they've been able to contribute as Ole Miss players. But teams can only request 5 draft grades, and presumably Ole Miss would have requested those for Robert Kimdichie, Laquan Treadwell, Laramie Tunsil. So that would be 5. That would seem to bode well for Chad Kelly's return, which I don't think was ever – in serious question, but there was some question there with the season that Kelly had. Certainly the NFL ties that he has with his uncle, Jim Kelly, the Hall of Fame quarterback. I know that Hugh Freeze told me last week he was confident that Chad Kelly would return. It certainly would look like that, and that will be a great starting point for an Ole Miss offense in 2016. That will be replacing two incredible talents in Treadwell and Tunsil. So good news there for Ole Miss. Shifting gears, Logan, a little bit of basketball. Andy Kennedy won his 200th game at Ole Miss on Tuesday night with a 99-80 win over Louisiana Tech. And he talked about that a little bit after the game. And he was asked to reflect on 200 wins and what stood out. And he went immediately to his first Ole Miss team in 2006, 2007, a group that had not experienced, a senior class that had not experienced a winning season in college basketball. And he talked about the end of the season, 3 wins to kind of get them over the hump there, comebacks against LSU and Alabama, and then comebacks against LSU and Auburn and a big win against Alabama. Those wins helped get Ole Miss to a share of the SEC West title, I believe, with State that year. Is that right?
I don't even remember. It's been that long ago.
It's been that long, man.
Yeah, it does seem like that. That does ring a bell, but that's been so long. That's been 2 coaches ago for me.
Yeah, it has been a long time ago, but that was the first year for Andy Kennedy. He's in his 10th season now. He has an Ole Miss record of 200 and 116. The Rebels have won 5 straight as they get ready to play at Memphis Friday night. Logan, what's going on with MSU basketball?
Well, as we record this on Wednesday, I still don't know the results from Mississippi State's men's basketball game against Florida State. They were traveling to Florida State, which there's their second straight back-to-back road game of the year. They lost a heartbreaker to Missouri Kansas City this past Saturday. Lost that game 72-67. Had a chance to win it right there at the very end, and just couldn't get a couple of shots to fall in the final minute, and ended up losing that game on the road, which is their first road game of the year. Malik Newman and Quindary Weatherspoon, they're two true freshmen that have played this year. Both of those guys played really well in that game, and Ben Hallam was encouraged by that. As for their game against Florida State, Florida State has 3 players that were 7'1" or taller, so that doesn't really bode well for Mississippi State in that game. They did defeat Florida State with those same type of players on the roster a year ago here in Starkville. It was kind of the signature win for Rick Ray last season, and that was about the only signature win for Rick Ray last season. Mississippi State really struggled for the third straight year under him, and of course, you know, his dismissal at the end of the season. They hired Ben Howland. Expectations were really high for Ben Howland, but Mississippi State is 4-4 as we record this. And in that game against Florida State, Travis Daniels, Mississippi State's starting power forward, is not going to play in that game. Suffered a concussion during Monday's practice. IJ Reddy is questionable for that game with a turf toe. So Mississippi State not only giving up a lot of size to Florida State in that game, also dealing with a couple of starters injured and hurt and going into that ball game. So Mississippi State's going into that game shorthanded and outmanned as far as size goes. So not really boding well for Mississippi State. They've got a game against Tulane coming up on Saturday, and then they'll got another game in Jackson next week, right before Christmas on Wednesday. They'll play Northern Colorado down in Jackson. They always play one game somewhere else other than the state. They've played that game in Tupelo. They've mentioned playing that game on the coast. So far, that hasn't happened. Most of the time, it's down there in Jackson, which is obviously fertile recruiting grounds for Mississippi State and Ole Miss both. So Mississippi State's going to dip down into Jackson, see if they can get a couple of prospects out to that game.
Hey, folks, we're going to talk some recruiting now with John Davis of the Oxford Citizen. JD does all things recruiting there at OxfordCitizen.com and also post to the blog at InsideOleMissSports.com. Lots of good things there. JD, let's start off at defensive tackle, given the recent Robert Kimdichie news, the still developing story out of Ole Miss. Whether or not he plays in the Sugar Bowl, Ole Miss is going to be transitioning along the defensive line. And let's talk a little bit about one of their commits, Benito Jones. I know you've gotten to see him a lot recently with Wayne County playing Oxford in the state championship game and then again in the Mississippi-Alabama All-Star game. What have been your impressions there?
Oh, he's a kid that will come in and play next year. Now, I don't know if he'll be a starter, but I think he's going to be good enough to see some minutes. I think he just has got – he's just so explosive in the middle. Johnny Hill, Oxford's coach, was talking about how good his offensive line played, and he said it in front of like two or three other coaches the other day at the Miss Al game. They're like, "Coach, I've never seen a line block as well as you did." And Benito still was around the ball. He was still making an impact. I think the point is, as good as Oxford played that night, you know, Benito was not going to be denied. Now he didn't get to everything, but if you take a play off with him, or if you don't block him right every single play, because the way he played, at least in the Oxford game and in the All-Star game, and I think throughout most of his career, he's got the athletic ability to make you look foolish. I mean, he's a guy that will get past you and lock up the quarterback for a sack or stop the running back for a 3 or 4 yard loss. I think there's no doubt about his ability long term. Now, he's not a big guy. He's 300 pounds or listed 300 pounds, and I can see him. I mean, I'm willing to believe, having seen him with my own eyes up close, that he's 300 pounds. But he's not tall. He's a 3-technique tackle. He's probably about 6'1". Not as tall as a Robert, but I think he's a bigger Isaac Gross. I think that's the better comparison. I think he's a guy that we've seen here on campus, guys that they've recruited in the past, guys that have been successful at other places, especially when you factor in a guy like Breland Speaks developing next to him. I think Benito is the kind of guy that can do a lot of things for you. And I think he is a very good get for the staff.
Well, you touched on something when you said around the ball. I think Ole Miss fans have seen that from Robert Kimdichie for 3 years, more around the ball than always getting to everything and making every big play. Robert Kimdichie, 7 tackles for loss, 3 sacks right now. You know, not massive numbers, not a large number of plays made, but every play, he seems to be a disruptive force somewhere, particularly when the play is coming to his side. Is that what you see in Benito?
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, he is very disruptive, especially now. I was told in other games, some people weren't as impressed by him. You know, the Rummel game that they played against that Rummel from Louisiana. I
right.
had a few people said that they weren't as impressed by him. Excuse me, but I know in the South half title game, and then against Oxford. And then again in the Miss Al game, three straight games in a row against some of the best competition, he really played well. And I think throughout his career, he's been a performer. And again, there's no question he's got a very fast step. I mean, that's the thing that Jack Abraham's father, that's an Oxford quarterback that played against him, said. I mean, he's just so quick. His first step is just so quick. He's got that burst. Very like a Warren Sapp type level burst, maybe, you know. And again, that's a guy that played in the NFL, but one of the quotes coming out of the Miss Al game from some of the players was, I think we're playing with guys, two or three guys that could be playing in the NFL, and the defensive line was the absolute strength as far as a position. I mean, AJ Brown and DK Metcalf ended up being co-MVPs, and they were very good, and they are very good, but the defensive line as a collective group was the most impressive part of Team Mississippi, and Benito Jones and Jeffrey Simmons, to me, were the anchors of all that.
Well, tell us about your week down there with the Miss Al guys, what you saw, what impressions you got from players, and who you think is going where.
Well, if you base it on how the kids interacted, and they all interacted very well, I went in there at every single event that they did, what in their dorm rooms. But I feel like I was behind the scenes enough, was in the locker room. I was actually allowed to go into the locker room, and I don't mind saying it now after the fact, but they told me, just don't let anybody know that you did this. I got in there, and I knew some of the coaches, and they were nice enough to let me go into the locker room. So I kind of even saw that side of it. A small picture of guys interacting in the locker room on top of practice, on top of the game. And it just is a very close-knit group. This is the first win for Team Mississippi in 8 years. I think that they all realized what was on the line, and I think they pulled even harder. And I think because of that one aspect, you know, that may get some of these guys to team up even further. To be Ole Miss guys or be Mississippi State guys or you know, be Alabama guys. I think Ole Miss is the one, though, from an in-state standpoint and just generally has a chance to be the biggest winner from the guys that are uncommitted that were playing for Team Mississippi. I firmly believe that Jeffrey Simmons is going to have Ole Miss in the final two. And right now, my gut tells me he picks Ole Miss. Things change. I do want to preface that for all the fans that will be listening. I've done this long enough, you know, and I'm about to actually write my 15th year anniversary story about the very first class I did with Coach Cutcliffe. You know, Frank Gore was committed to Ole Miss the night before signing day, and he ultimately ended up signing with the University of Miami. And, you know, just when you think you've got somebody, things change. So take all that with a grain of salt. But I firmly believe what I saw with my own eyes, and I think the guys like Benito are talking to him. Guys like DK are talking to him. A.J. Brown's another one. You know, A.J. Brown and Jeffrey Simmons are the two guys that would be the biggest feathers in Ole Miss's cap if that was the case, if they were able to get those two. That would be a huge haul and make huge impacts long term. I think Metcalf and A.J. Brown showed their ability, teamed up together, and Benito Jones and Jeffrey Simmons next to each other, even though one's an end and one's a tackle. Those are the kind of guys you need to team up with to have a chance to win championships. You got to have several guys. You can't just have one guy.
Well, I'll tell you what, who were the other Ole Miss commits in the game? There were three, right? Octavius Cooley and DK
Octavius
Metcalf.
Octavius Cooley, and he's a soft commit now. Now, that's another little development, if you will. Got him on record talking about he's going to Alabama, LSU, and Mississippi State. Then you got DK Metcalf, and then you've got Gosh, I can't remember. Oh, Eli Johnson, who played center,
That
is his new position. Right. That is his new position. I really feel like he is going to be a really, really good center. He had taken four snaps. You know, I had five kids that I had covered in high school, Parrish, play in this game, okay? And Eli was one of them, and he came up to me during one of the practices. He said, they're going to put me at center. They're going to put me at center. This guy can't. The guy that they picked to be a center, he's just not doing a great job with the snaps. And I'm like, well, Eli, you can do it. And he said, well, I think I can. I'm a little nervous. Blah, blah, blah. We continue to talk. I said, you're going to be fine. You know, I just, you know, wished him the best. And he got out there that next day and he did a fantastic job. And I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that he needs to be a center at this next level. He will be a good center at this level. He's tough minded. He's smart. And, you know, he was a tackle in high school, and he even said, you know, I'm 6'2.5", I've got to play inside. He's not tall enough. He's not whatever, it takes to play tackle at this level. But I absolutely think he can be a really good center. And if you think about it, you start to really get, you know, analyze the depth chart for Ole Miss. They really need a center. This is the year that they're going to need a senior. Not only is Robert Conyers potentially going to miss the spring, but, you know, after next year, Robert Conyers is going to be pretty much at that point of eligibility gone. You know, Ben Steele's losing eligibility. He's gone. You need a center.
Yeah, they were working Sean Rawlings, who signed as a center, played tackle this year when Tunsil was out. They were working him at center again, I noticed, in the bowl.
Well, you're going to have somebody. That's right.
Right. You got to have somebody. You got to have numbers just to get through spring.
Right, and that's the thing about it. I mean, Rawlings is a great candidate to potentially be there. But then again, Eli Johnson, because he's an early enrollee, will get a lot of reps at that center position. And I think with the job that he did on short notice and not having not played that in his high school career, I think his upside is tremendous.
JD, not a day goes by that I don't get a question on Twitter, it seems, with people asking what's up with Sean Patterson. And is he firm in his commitment, and will he be at Ole Miss? What are you hearing on all that?
Well, I firmly believe that Shea Patterson is enamored with the idea of really betting it out. I do think that there's this, you know, thought in his mind of looking at it all. But I've seen him in Oxford enough, seen him with Hugh Freeze's daughters, seen him interact with DK Metcalf. I mean, he was probably at the last three Oxford high school games. You know, once IMG Academy got done, he was here. He was up here. His brother's obviously on staff. He committed to Ole Miss a long time ago, and I think that's part of it. I think now that these guys like Cooley, who's been committed for roughly, oh gosh, you know, going on a year or longer. You know, I talked to him last basketball season at the state championship, if you remember, about his commitment. And I want to say he committed last December or something like that without me looking at it in front of me. The point
I know
is,
you
I
wrote
think,
about it on the blog months ago, long time.
Months ago. Oh, 9 months ago. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was back I talked to him in Jackson. That was the first time I actually saw him after the commitment. He was playing basketball, and he looks like Charles Barkley, by the way. You know, he gets, you know, he looks like he's that this round down to rebound down there. And so I talked to him in Jackson at the state basketball tournament. And so you're talking about last March, early March, you're talking about 9 full months ago. And that was after he committed. And so I think now that the actual process is here, he's going, man, maybe I do need to take some visits. Maybe I do need to just kind of look around. And I think it's great to commit. And I think that there's pressure on them to commit to a degree. I do think coaches really like to get the numbers up. Here's what early commitments do for these staffs. And this is the absolute truth. They can get their numbers done by summer. If they get most of their commitments, especially the guys that they think are really going to help them, they start working on 17, and then they start working on 18. And that's what it goes back to. The more commitments you can get into your pocket, the more you can start looking forward to that next class. You know, years ago, that was not the case, especially here. Coach Cutcliffe was getting the vast majority of his commitments at this time of year or going into January. It is completely different. The vast majority of your commitments are now coming in April, May, June, July. Once you go through that camp cycle, more often than not, Ole Miss has had 15, 16, 20, you know, in that range, double-digit range of commitments under Hugh Freeze. And the big reason for that is they're starting to work on 17 and starting to work on 18. And all these colleges are doing it. So I think in Cooley's case or Shea Patterson's case, while I think they're committed, I think that they're still kind of looking or maybe kind of ready to listen to it.
Just
and the idea
to enjoy the process.
Some
kids don't like it. Some kids do. Some kids want that attention. They want to be courted. And, you know, and if you commit early, well, you know, you obviously miss out on some of that.
Yeah, and I think that's all part of it. And I think Shea Patterson really thinks a lot of Ole Miss. And I think because his brother's here, that's kind of icing on top of the cake. I mean, I think there's a foundation there just in general, okay? He even thought about transferring to play at Lafayette during the summer to try to get ready that much closer and, you know, be around Oxford. So the comfort level of Oxford, Ole Miss, Hugh Freeze, the whole ball of wax is huge. Big, big, big plus for Ole Miss. So do I think he ultimately sticks? Yes, I do. Do I think that he is looking, hearing, whatever you want to call it, to other programs? Yes, I do. Do I think Alabama has stopped recruiting? No, they have not. They have been on that kid since day one. They have been pushing. And now that recruiting's become a bigger focal point because the season is not going on, everybody's starting to go, oh, my gosh, is this real? It's been there. It's just not been as amplified. You know, recruiting is a bigger topic now because we're closer to signing day. And there's no football to distract you. There's no, are we going to beat Mississippi State? Or, oh, man, are we going to beat LSU? It's, is Shea Patterson going to stick? Well, Shea Patterson, was he going to stick back in November or October? That was still the same question, you know?
Well,
I mean, it's not like Alabama stopped texting him or calling him or social meeting him, you know?
Who are the kids in the Ole Miss class who have expressed a desire and intention to enroll earlier? Obviously, Shea Patterson is one.
Well, there's nine guys, and that's a lot. That's another.
That is a huge group to enroll early.
And this is a 27 signee potential class.
Yeah.
You know, their numbers have been down, and they've had a chance to roll over. This staff is, you know, this is the thing I want Ole Miss fans that are listening to this to understand. This staff knows what they're doing. And that's a nutshell version. I mean, there's so many more specifics we could talk about. But trust me, they're not going to get everybody they want. I can guarantee you that. They're not going to get everybody that they want or you want. But they're going to get what they need. They're going to get the vast majority of who's on their board. And they're going to get some talented guys. And the thing about them is they've done a really good job of being able to sign kids, get them in, get them enrolled. The vast majority of these kids are, you know, when you have nine guys that are coming in early, those are guys that are full qualifiers. They can be in there for spring. I mean, this staff has really done a good job, in my opinion, having covered other staffs that have been at this at Ole Miss, as far as getting the numbers they need to get, getting the talent they need to get, and getting them in when they need to get them. So nine guys, you know, Dante Evans is one of them. Eli Johnson's one I already mentioned. DK Metcalf is not. He's going to go through and do track, even though he could. He's fantastic grade-wise. I'm trying to think right now, who else? I'd have to look at the list, and I'm not doing it right now. And I apologize. Maybe I should have already done that, and that's my fault. But there are nine guys, or were nine guys, projected to be here in December. Some of the guys from over in Georgia, like I said, Dante Evans, offensive lineman, the Tafor kid, I believe, was also going to be an early enrollee. So they're going to have guys that are going to be here in the spring and have a chance to jump on board and you know, maybe make an impact their first year. I think anytime you can get into the spring semester, you're that much further ahead. And, you know, and Ole Miss needs that. I mean, with them losing three guys to the NFL draft, and 19 seniors overall, it's 22 kids off this year's team. you know, that's when you need guys to come in early and have a chance to continue this continuity and, you know, be consistent winner and all that kind of good stuff.
JD, good stuff, man. We'll catch up with you next week. Good work.
Okay, thank you.
That was John Davis, the sports editor of the Oxford Citizen, one of our sister publications that do such good work, and we appreciate John Davis being with us. Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage with Parrish Alford and Logan Lowry of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal, a production of the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Be sure to check out the memo as well with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. Good stuff there. Our news podcast with current events and all things going on in Northeast Mississippi. Thanks for being with us, folks.